financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor. I'm flying solo today because my co-host, Jess Tyler, is feeling a little bit under the weather. And because I thought this topic is too important to table. I haven't talked about it on the air for a couple of years, and I was reminded about it because one of our young friends, Aria, she just went off to join the Navy on Sunday. And also on Saturday, my band, I'm a vocalist for those of you who don't know that, my band was playing in Orange, Massachusetts for a boat parade, pre-boat parade concert. And our bass player, Wes Brown, for that evening was wearing a Naval Academy hat. And when we asked him about it, he said that he was not in the military, but his dad was the first African-American graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, which is a pretty amazing feat. His dad lived to be 85, passed away in 2012, and was in the military for more than 20 years, was involved in Korea and the Vietnam War, and retired as a lieutenant colonel, lieutenant commander. So, you know, these things just brought back to me the kind of service that our military provides and the diversity of ethnicity that's involved in our military. And for me personally, that goes back to thinking about their financial readiness. There's a saying that financial readiness is military readiness because a military member who is, you know, a service member who is focused on, for instance, not losing their home or, you know, paying a debt is not going to be focused on their job in the same way. Of course, everybody wants to believe that they are always focused, but in the same way that someone who is unburdened from that financial drama, if you will. And also sometimes military personnel who suffer from credit default may not be able to serve at all if they lose their security clearance. So, you know, these are important things to think about, but I don't think that it's not at the forefront when we think about military personnel. We worry about their safety. We worry about their families at home, all of that. But in fact, the money actually really matters to service members. And there are real benefits available to anybody who's on active duty, certainly. And I'm going to go over those today so that people are aware of it. So I think the first thing to remember is that any loans that you got prior to joining the service, those could be at 6%, but you have to ask for it. You have to find your unit leader and just say, do I have these benefits? You know, how do I get these benefits? Because you do have them. And they reach pretty far. Now, that could be your student loans. It could be your mortgage. It could be your credit cards. It could be anything that you're paying for, that you signed up for before enrolling, like your car loan. And those could all be at 6%. In fact, there are some things that active duty service members, including reservists and members of the National Guard who are on active duty, are eligible for. And these benefits usually begin the date that you enter active duty, and they generally terminate about a month to 3 months after you're discharged. So some of the benefits are, I've got my little bullet list here. Some of the benefits are that it prevents your landlord from evicting you unless your rent is higher than, are you ready for this, $9,106.46 a month. Of course, this number changes every year. That was a 2023 number. It also stops foreclosures without a court order. So if you're on active duty, you know, your house can't get foreclosed on. Now, wow, we need to talk about that, because I have done shows with service members who have either had the personal experience or known someone who lost their house after coming off of active duty. Sure, they didn't have to pay their mortgage while they were on active duty, but guess what happened? All of that money that was owed accumulated. It built up as a default or as a debt that's due. And then they come off of active duty and bam, they get a bill for all that past due mortgage money and mortgage payments. And they can't pay it usually. And so that's extremely sad. If I could suggest any reform in this Service Members Civil Relief Act, it should be maybe Service Members Credit Relief Act for the acronym, but you know, the military, everything's in acronyms, and SCRA is Service Members Civil Relief Act. If I could recommend ever some sort of reform in this act, it would be that, you know, when somebody comes off of active duty, and they do give them some time, I think there might be a 6-month timeline or something to try to catch up, but there should be something, I think, available to all military personnel, whether they're on active duty or not, that would be an added benefit to them, in my opinion. So also, your vehicle cannot be repossessed without a court order if you made a deposit or at least one payment before you joined up. You can't be taken to court for civil proceedings. Now, I've known people who say, well, can I just join the military and get out of my, you know, my divorce or my child's support? And the hearings, yeah, you can't be taken to court while you're on active duty. And that only makes sense. They're not going to pull you off of active duty to bring you to court for your divorce. But when you come off of active duty, you know, it's back to normal. Even if you're storing all of your belongings in one of those pods or a storage center somewhere, this act prevents them from selling your belongings for overdue rent without a court order, as long as you're on active duty. So there are many, many, many more things about this that have to do with, you know, whether you are mobilized PCS, OCONUS, you know, outside of the continental United States, for at least 180 days or not. For instance, you can end a vehicle lease that you signed before joining if you're mobilized PCS OCONUS or deployed OCONUS for at least 180 days. You can terminate your telecom. So your telephone, your internet, your cable, you can terminate those telecom contracts if you have any still, if you relocate for at least 90 days to an area that doesn't have service. Lots of places don't, so, and they can't penalize you for it. You can keep your current phone number if, in fact, you cancel your service due to relocation that lasts less than 3 years. So you cancel your service, you're relocated to wherever, Liberia, and if it's less than 3 years, you can get your original phone number back. You can end a housing lease without a penalty if you deploy for 90 days or more. Even your surviving spouse can terminate a lease if their partner dies on active duty. So the idea here is to not you know, pin people down with these payments that they have to make or damage to their credit, for instance, while they're on active duty. And in fact, if you do default on your credit cards or you don't make payments on your mortgage or whatever, while you're on active duty, it cannot affect your credit. Can't harm your credit. Now, you have to remember that when you come off of active duty, if you're still delinquent, that's going to show up on your credit. And that can be a problem, especially for military personnel, not just in not getting their loans, but some jobs, as I mentioned, you won't be able to do with bad credit. This is an interesting thing. For tax purposes, you get three choices. Your military spouse can claim either the home of record, the service member's state of legal residence, or the state they're living in for tax purposes. Interesting to have that choice. So I think I mentioned this before, but it bears repeating. It limits all the interest on all your loans taken out before you join the military to 6%. If there is one takeaway from this show, it should be that. Get to your unit leader if you have debt and it's higher at 6% and say, look, I want to get my benefits under SCRA and have my percentages lowered to 6%. Now, I believe that's not even active duty. I think that's just a service member straight across the board. If you're in the service, you can get 6% on all those loans, but you've got to ask for it. Also, if you use any of your SCRA rights, as I talked about, to delay your payments, then it won't affect your credit report. So you have other rights under this guideline regarding property taxes, federal taxes, life insurance, and financial or legal penalties even, and court proceedings, et cetera. But you have to check with your unit legal officer for the specifics. So I hope this part is helpful. I'd like to talk more about, what happens for people in the military, that diverse culture I'm talking about, why so many people are affected by that, by being credit invisible, for instance, when we come back. Want to know what it would feel like to be financially unburdened? Let your HUG financial coach help you take a load off. Do it for yourself and for those you love. HUG Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Welcome back to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor. We are talking about military personnel today and the benefits that they may have, whether or not on active duty, under the Service Members Civil Relief Act, SCRA. So I think this is very important for people to remember and for families to listen to and relay this information to anybody that you know is in the service, because it could make a big difference to them. If you can imagine being deployed or being far away from home or being on active duty or, suffering any of the fallout, if you'll pardon that pun, that military personnel deal with on a daily basis. I mean, that's a rugged, important, difficult life. And if you add to that the stress of financial worries, financial burdens, it's going to take its toll somewhere. And I think those of us who have ever just had a financial problem that caused them not to sleep or to find that their memory is, not as strong as it would have been, they're doing foolish things because they're distracted all the time. You don't want to be doing that with a weapon in your hands or your life at stake. So anything we can do to limit the monetary stress that personnel, military personnel suffer, I think is incredibly important. To that end, I want to talk a little bit about some statistics, because I mentioned before the break something called credit invisible. And there are statistics that show that a third of our nation, a third of the people in America are what we call credit invisible. That does not mean they have bad credit. It means they don't have any credit. And anybody who's ever tried to just get a loan without credit is incredibly frustrated by the fact that maybe they've paid cash for everything in their life, and so they don't have a credit history. So they're very, very trustworthy, perhaps, but they can't prove it on paper. And so we talk about how to build credit for people in that situation. But largely, that sector, that credit invisible sector, is made up, believe it or not, of Black and Hispanic individuals. Now, that is not a stereotype. It's not that all Blacks or all Hispanics don't have credit. Of course not. But it is an injustice, I think, in my view, that many people in those of that ethnicity don't get the same information that some other people seem to be getting. And I don't like it. I'm trying to do anything I can to improve that. But it is a statistic fact right now that largely that third is made up of credit invisible people, is made up of Black and Hispanic people. Now, the reason I'm talking about that in a show when we're talking about military benefits is because the statistics in the military are very interesting when we look at that ethnicity and what people are not do not have available to them or don't know about. And that's why we're talking about SCRA today. So for instance, I could only get the statistics as early as recent as 2019, unfortunately, because this is a slow moving system. But in 2019, the proportion of the military in the United States that was Black, 28.92% and 16.94%. Now, guess which one were men and which was women? The women made up 28.92%. Black women in the military, 28.92%. Black men in the military in 2019, 16.94%. This is a lot of people we're talking about. Now, when we look at Hispanic, 21.39% of the women in the military were Hispanic and 17.9% of men. So now when we start to look at this sort of racial divide, this unfortunate credit invisible thing that we have going on, and we link that to what our statistics tell us are credit invisible and what portion of the military are also in the same categories, then I think it becomes even more important for us to be talking about SCRA, because it doesn't see color. It doesn't care. If you're in the military, you got this shot at this, right? You can get 6% on all your debts. You can keep them from foreclosing on your home. You can, you know, things you can do here, whether you're on active duty or not active duty, you have to ask your unit leader about that, and they'll get you to the right area so that you can learn what benefits you have available. I also want to talk more about this because, and please understand me, again, it isn't necessarily color related, but the statistics, which is what, you know, I cut my teeth on statistics, because they tell us something about where the inequities are or where things are going well or going wrong. The statistics show that Black and Hispanics also take on more payday loans and more loans at high interest rates because many of them are credit invisible. And if you've ever known anybody who's taken on a payday loan or a loan at a very high interest rate, even a credit card at a very high interest rate, what you know is that it's extremely hard to pay that off in any sort of reasonable time without, even if you pay it off, you're just paying a ton of interest. And it just seems, quite honestly, it seems sad to me. I don't want people who are trying to make ends meet have their only safety net is some ridiculous payday loan or high interest loan. I mean, payday loans, I've done shows about this, and if you look them up, they're an interesting topic all their own. Payday loans have, you know, APRs, right? Interest rates effectively for the whole year that are, you know, upwards of 400%. I remember one was 1,200%. And I called the company directly and I started to ask them questions about it as if I were a candidate. And I got the biggest story. Oh my gosh. The story they told me was, oh, well, you know, you're only going to pay this for a short period of time. You give us your checking account information and then we'll just debit the payments from your checking account, etc. When I said to them, but that's 1,200% interest in a year. How is that legal? Well, first they give you a song and dance. Well, you know, it's not really that much because you're not going to pay it for very long and blah, blah, blah. Well, it is that much. That's the APR when you start calculating those things, even at 400%. How is this legal? And what I learned was that it's legal usually because those companies are often run by somebody that is in some way listed as a sovereign nation. So ironically, right, we have a minority sovereign nation population running payday loan companies who give loans to minorities at ridiculously high interest rates. Don't get me going. I'm on an Andy Rooney rant. I'm dating myself there. But I just think that, you know, this is so important that our military personnel are not out there under the strain that they're under on a normal daily basis, far away from home, dealing with difficult things. Even the National Guard, it always fascinates me that the National Guard, these people work regular jobs on a daily basis, and then bam, they get deployed and suddenly they're carrying weapons and you know, driving tanks and doing what they do to keep us safe. And it's really, it's unthinkable to me. I my hat is off to anybody who's ever joined the military, voluntary or involuntarily. I cannot conceive of what that lifestyle must be like. And the only thing that I can do, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny little thing, but if I'm reaching anybody about this, the only thing that I can do to try and help alleviate some of that strain that I know of is to reach out and say, I will help military personnel with their finances. And this is one way for me to do that. Of course, that, you know, anybody can reach out to us at our office and get help anywhere in the world. All our appointments are virtual. Doesn't matter where you are, as long as you have service, we can do it, and we can help your families as well. Because nobody does this alone. You may feel very alone in the military, but I promise you, there's somebody back home who cares about you and who cares whether your finances are working or not. And that leads me to another point that happens very often. Somebody's in the military, there's somebody back home that maybe doesn't have their best interest at heart, but is taking advantage of these benefits, like not paying the mortgage because they can, you know, they cannot be evicted or foreclosed on, maybe not paying their rent, you know, avoiding a car lease payment or something like that. And the service member has no idea. They just don't know what's going on. They're busy, you know, being a service member. And then they come home and they discover this disaster. And I have heard this story far too many times. Oh, I just got the chills thinking about that. But it's true. I've heard this story so many times. And it's just wrong. I mean, I could come up with other words, but it's just wrong that you're there protecting your country and fighting for our freedoms. And you come home to find out that your freedom has been encumbered by debt and by maybe mismanagement of your funds and by benefits that you had, which now just, poof, they just disappear when you're off of active duty and you're left holding the bag about what you can do with that. So, you know, I know this isn't a terribly upbeat show for you all, but I'm hoping that it's a very relevant and I hope prudent topic for you. I think it might be important to talk about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the Military Lending Act, the Federal Trade Commission, places that you can go to get information about what your benefits are. The Military Lending Act, for instance, limits the amount that they can charge non-active service members for credit cards to, you know, are you ready for this, 36%? I'd like to see more progress with that. I don't think anybody should be charged 36% for a credit card at all, never mind our military, but it was progress. There was a time when these lenders would sit right there on the base and offer credit cards to people who were, you know, in need of it right away without ever leaving the base. And there are other benefits for military in the Military Lending Act as well, including the payday loans, which are capped at 36%. So for whatever this is worth, you might want to just Google that Military Lending Act, MLA, and read up, maybe check the Federal Trade Commission, FTC.gov website, and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, which has been stripped of a lot of its power fairly recently, but I think I hope will continue to be able to protect consumers, and that includes people in the military, of course. So check that stuff out and educate yourself about this, because you really may have far more benefits than we're even talking about today. And of course, I want you to get the most accurate and up-to-date information possible. So get your phone out, your iPad, your laptop, whatever, and start Googling this stuff.
If you're in the military, you should know about your rights and benefits under SCRA. Managing your finances is more complicated while you're enlisted. So speak to your unit legal officer or contact HUG today and get back to what you do best, protecting and serving the ones you love. Thank you for your service. Your HUG financial coach is ready to help. HUG your money. So unique, it's patented.
If you know anyone in the service, please share this with them so that they can get the details out of it and they know what to do and where to go to ask for help under the Service Members Civil Relief Act. And I suppose as a woman, I will say I was pleasantly surprised by the statistics of how many military personnel were women, particularly among Black and Hispanic service members. And I think maybe this is not, maybe this isn't a fact, but my experience tells me that women deal with money, their relationship with money in general, of course, women have a different way of looking at it than men have. And sometimes that's very proactive and logical, and they're great at it and everybody's happy about it. And but usually underneath there, it means they're managing stress at a high level. And they're probably not talking about it. They're probably not, especially for somebody in the military who is, you know, they spend every day eating, living, and breathing. I can do this myself. You know, I'm part of a team, but everybody relies on me. I'm getting it done. Well, when it comes to money, that's not as easy as it seems, especially if you're focused on other things that, you know, may be more important to you at this time. So just a little note that we're here to help anybody, of course, but certainly service members about this. And so, you know, if you have trouble getting into a virtual meeting, that's just fine. We can email, we can text, you can get somebody at home to meet with us and they can relay the information, whatever is the case. So one last thing I'd like to say is if you're in the military and you've experienced any of the things I'm talking about, whether it's a good story or bad story, whether it's upbeat or it's really dramatic, I would love to hear from you. And there's a chance that we might set some sort of a show up like this, maybe with a group, maybe with one or two people to talk further about this, because I think it is an important topic and one that I'm happy that we got a chance to cover today. So please write in with your questions, which I don't get to see ahead of time, to J. Tyler, that's the letter J, T-Y-L-E-R, at whmp.com, and we'll answer them on the air. And if we do, you get a copy of my book, Retire Debt and Retire Well. Or you can just write to us at info@hugyourmoney.com, and we're happy to answer your questions directly. You just need to let us know if it's okay to use it on the air or you just want us to answer it privately. Either is just fine. And you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com. That's hug, like everybody needs a hug, yourmoney.com. Or you can call us at the office at 413-773-3333. We'll be back next week with another episode of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, hopefully with my co-host Jay Tyler, Jess Tyler again. Hopefully she's feeling better. Thank you. Be well. Stay safe. Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info@hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. We've got questions today, and we're going to put you on the spot.
Love it. Okay, bring it on. Bring
it
on, baby.
We're going to start right off here. Angela from Northampton, she's 50. She needs a car to get to work to every day, but isn't sure if she should buy a new one or used car. She said her annual income is around $60,000, but she has significant credit card debt, over $35,000, a mortgage, and three kids.
Woo! Okay.
A mouthful.
Wow, Angela. Okay. So first of all, I want Angela to call me. I'm going to help her. But
to get that credit card debt paid down?
To get everything, the mortgage, all of that. But also anybody who's got all of that on their shoulders with $60,000 of income really needs a plan to reverse the damage. So yeah, I would be happy to help her. I love those kinds of challenges. Should she buy a new or used car is her question. You know, I'm always hesitant to give a one-off answer like this because clearly if her income was $300,000 and she had no debt, my answer might be different, right?
Right.
But
yeah.
Should she buy a new or used is really a matter of the numbers. And so we should talk about this. Advisors love to say, never buy new. It's a bad investment. You're going to lose money the moment you drive it off the lot. Always buy used. You know, while those things are true, a new car does depreciate immediately. There are reasons people buy new cars, right? I mean, one of them is just, they just want a new car. They like the feeling of having a brand new car. And if it's affordable and you don't mind the fact that you're buying something that is a depreciating, dare I say, asset, because I don't usually consider vehicles assets. But if you don't mind that, then buying a new car is no problem for you. However, where the question comes in is, are you really getting a better deal buying a used car? So that's the inference, is if I buy a used car, I'll be doing something better for myself financially than if I bought a new car. So let's go into the details of this. We're going to talk about something I call the sweet spot here.
Okay.
Because when people are deciding, somebody in Angela's position where they have, an income, but it's really burdened by mortgage and credit card payments and raising children and all of that, they don't have a lot of spare cash. They're probably not walking in and buying a used car in cash. What she's probably really asking is, where am I going to be better on a payment, a new car, used car? All right. So the sweet spot I'm talking about is if you buy a used car, but you ask your bank or whoever is doing the loan, whether it's the car dealer or your local credit union or bank, whoever's doing this loan, if you ask them, what is the oldest car I can buy and still have a, let's say, 6-year loan. I know they're giving 8-year loans now, but I'd like it not to be any longer than 6 years if possible. So what's the oldest car I can buy and still get that long-term loan with a decent interest rate?
Okay.
So let's say your banker says, look, you can buy, this is 2024. So let's say your banker says, you can buy a 2022 car and still get 6 years. But if you go to 2021, we're only going to give you 4 years. The price difference between the car that is a year older, the 2021 X car, and the 2022 X car is probably not that great. But the fact that you have shrunken your time to pay it back from 6 years to 4 years means your payment is going to be higher, accepting that interest rates are similar, of course, right?
Right.
So that sweet spot I'm talking about is what's the oldest car you can buy within that new car loan term, essentially, within that 6 or 7 year car loan term. That's part one. So let's say she finds that sweet spot and she says, okay, I'm going to buy a used car, but I'm going to buy a whatever year car my bank tells me I can get. That means it has depreciated plenty. I'm going to look for the best deal. I'm going to get low mileage, something that's had great maintenance records, do your Carfax, get a mechanic to look at it, all those things. Check your prices, right? Don't get pushed into something by somebody who's overly enthusiastic. Walk away after you've looked at these cars. Go home, make your decision calmly. So let's say she does all of that and she gets her new car payment. I know these answers are long, but that's the whole point. Okay, she gets her new car payment. Now what? So now what is the biggest deal? Of course, I don't want her to have a 4-year-old car with a 7-year payment on it, right? The idea is you get the 4-year-old car with a 7-year payment, but you put it in something like our system and you see where it gets paid off, and where it gets paid off might be 3 years.
Right.
That changes everything for people. That means you can make plan A and plan B. Now you can say, I'm going to buy this older car. I'm going to take this longer term. I'm going to pay it off in 3 years. And in the meantime, I'm going to put myself in a better position to buy a better car 3-4 years from now, mm-hmm. right? Because the car is paid off early. And so you can do all of that with the same money, but you must have a plan. You must have a plan that works consistently with the kind of coaching behind it that helps it stay on track when things like this come up. So that is a long answer. I hope it wasn't too much for people listening to it, but I tend to pull out these little bullet points that people aren't talking to you about, like the oldest car with the longest term loan. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to pay for it long term. I want you to pay it off ahead of schedule, but I want her to have an affordable payment on a decent car that she can rely on to get to work. So thank you for that question.
Just to add on to that question, is it smarter to go to the bank to get approved before you go? Are the car dealers always, they're not always looking for the best interest rate for you, right? So is it smarter to go ahead of time?
Again, it depends. Is it smarter to go ahead of time? I think it's a good idea to know what interest rates you're looking at, but for some people, that's a little dangerous. They go to a bank and the bank says, they're saying, I want to buy a $10,000 car. And the bank says, oh, you qualify for $25,000. Mm-hmm. Then they get that in their head. They go car shopping. So what I would say is worthwhile is go ahead and ask the car dealer what they're going to finance at if you want. But ask your local banks as well, because, you know, very often car dealers are making money in finance in the middle. That's what they're designed to do. And sometimes they have 0%. And is it really zero? We could argue that all day long, but that's what it is. What I do recommend is that you go to a car dealer if you're going to shop at a dealer, and you ask them, you just say right up front, I'm not going to finance this. I just want a cash price. Mm-hmm. And you get your price first, and then you can say, I'm going to finance it elsewhere. Whatever, to them it's cash. Or you can say, I've changed my mind. I want to finance this. What do you have for rates? Mm-hmm. But buy it in cash, at least on paper first, or, you know, theoretically first, so you know what your real price is.
Okay. All right. Moving on to Michael from Amherst. He said he's looking to invest in risky investments with higher returns, but is not sure if that's a good idea because he turned 67. So he's looking to supplement his Social Security income, says he does not want to return to work. So he thinks a higher risk investment in the short term might give him a better return. He spent a lot of money on his kids' education and mortgage instead of saving for retirement, and he unexpectedly lost half of his investments in a messy divorce. That's a complicated question.
Yes and no. I mean, certainly my heart goes out to him. He's trying to start over basically financially at 67, but the operative word here is might. His higher risk investments might give him a higher return. They might also result in more losses. Mm-hmm. So what does Michael do? Well, first of all, thank you, Michael, for putting your kids through college and paying a mortgage at your own peril. But let's not do that, folks. Could we just make a plan going forward that helps you retire well, even though you're putting your kids through college and paying your mortgage? The divorce, you know, not much you can do about that. Those are brutal financially, and he suffered that, of course. And the truth be known, both parties usually suffer financially in a divorce. But what can he do? Well, the goal here is for him to make higher earnings. He's trying to make up for lost time.
Right.
It's very dangerous to do it, in my opinion, by saying, well, I'll just take some higher risk investments, because they're called higher risk for a reason. They're not called higher earners. They're called higher risk, right? Sometimes you will make more money on them. But what if you don't? When you're older, like Michael is 67, he's certainly not an old man, but at 67, he doesn't want to return to work. He's telling us, I don't have another income stream. I'm relying on this mm-hmm. by retirement. That points me in the direction of something that may be linked to the market. So he might get the kinds of earnings based on the indexes or indices in the market, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the Russell, you know, all the indices that people hear about, JP Morgan, whatever. It might be linked to the market, but because he is retired, not wanting to return to work, needs the safety, relies on his Social Security, all of that, that points me toward a conservative type of an investment. Those two things come in together to blend in an indexed annuity, and there are tons of them out there. So you want to find a really good one, and you want to find somebody who knows what they're talking about with that. But what indexed annuities are designed to do is to guarantee your principal, so you don't have the losses, you're not going backwards, mm-hmm. but to give you the earnings linked to the market. So your money's not directly invested in the market. You don't own the S&P 500 shares, but they use those indices as a barometer for what they're going to pay you. And that's where it gets tricky. That's where you really want somebody who can explain the ins and outs of these different contracts to you, because they vary widely. But some of them are incredibly good, and many of them are designed to produce the kind of income that he's probably looking for. And here's the kicker. It could be guaranteed for the rest of his life. So he doesn't have to worry at that point when he turns on the income of, is he going to outlive that income or not? You know, if he spends all of what he put in there and he's still alive, too bad, so sad, they have to keep paying him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that seems like that's the best option for sure.
It's an option for him. I don't know the rest of his picture, but yeah, I would lean in that direction at this point, knowing what I know.
All right. Well, I think it's a good time to break here, and we will have many more questions coming up with the Money Doctor. Dr. Frances Ram, I want to get your phone number, though.
Thanks, Jess. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can also visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, coming up on WHMP.
Tired of juggling your finances? Your HUG financial coach can help. HUG Your Money, so unique, it's patented. For more information, visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi.
Hey, Jess. You know,
I love when we do these shows and we do questions, because they're kind of all over the place. So you get a little bit of everything. It's a mixed bag.
There's no doubt. I love this too, because it's what better way to give people what they're wanting than to have them write in with questions and answer them on the air? I love this. And I'm really happy people take the time to write in. But although we say to write to Jay Tyler at WHMP, that's the letter J, T-Y-L-E-R, so that I don't know the questions, people still write to us. They still write to us directly. So when that happens, I ask, you know, is it okay to use this question on the air? And so we do. So I have some questions here. I don't know how many we'll get through, but I've been getting emails about these things too. So let me start with John from Amherst. John from Amherst, he has a home equity line of credit, which is about to amortize. The interest rates are high currently. What should he do? Okay. So home equity line of credit, a HELOC, we call them, is different than a home equity loan. So the first thing you need to know is a line of credit is designed just as that. It's a home equity line of credit. You're able to draw against your credit based on whatever they told you you could have. So let's say you had a $50,000 home equity line of credit. It's a revolving line. So if you only use $10,000 of it, you're only paying on $10,000 of it. Whereas a home equity loan, they would give you the whole $50,000 up front. You'd be paying on it just like any other.
Right.
They are both second mortgages. I love how we've given them different names so they seem less harmful. People say to me all the time, I don't have a mortgage on my house. I just have a home equity line.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Secured by your house. It's a mortgage. All right. So what should he do? Well, this is a common question right now, because for probably 10 years, I'm guessing, he doesn't say here, but if it's about to amortize, it was probably a 10-year drawdown with a 10 or a 15-year payback. I'm going
pause,
to assume.
Pause for 1 second. What does amortize mean?
Oh, amortize means that they turn it into a stream of payments. So when you get your regular mortgage, a 30-year mortgage, and it says you're going to pay this much monthly over 30 years, that is amortization.
Okay.
That's how they break it into payments, so that it amortizes over the life of the loan until it's dead.
Okay.
Until it's dead. Okay. So, so what happens with these home equity lines is they have a 10-year drawdown. In other words, for 10 years, you're paying interest only. You can pay more if you want to, but most people think they will and then forget and send the minimum payment, right? So you pay interest only for 10 years. And then they're designed to turn into, or to amortize into, a standard payback term of usually 15 years. Now, so if you think about that for a minute, what you're really doing is getting a 25-year mortgage where you're going to pay 10 years of interest up front.
Oh, yeah.
It's, It's okay if you do it right. They're very useful if you do this right. I recommend them sometimes for certain things, but you must pay attention to it. So what he's asking is, okay, I've been paying interest only for 10 years, and now it's going to turn into a 15-year payback. It's going to amortize, and it's going to do that at these rates of whatever 9% or whatever his rate is right now. That means his interest-only payment, which might have been $200, I'm mm-hmm. using round figures here, is probably going to jump to, say, $500 a month.
Mm, yeah.
So yeah. Panic ensues. And right. Say, I can't afford this payment, right? Because for 10 years, they've been living on this, you know, $150 or $200 payment. All of a sudden, now it's higher. What are they going to do? So he has some choices here. But the first choice, I would say, might be simply to refinance the home equity line of credit, even at the current lender he's got it at. Just say, I don't want this thing to amortize. My payment's going to go through the roof. Can you write me a new one? And they will usually do it as long as his credit and his house are in similar condition as they were or in acceptable condition now. They'll do it and they'll charge him, you know, interest only again for another 10 years. Now,
okay,
crisis averted. I don't know. Do you want to pay interest only for another 10 years and then have
right.
to pay again?
And who knows what the rate's going to be then? Yeah.
Yeah. So like the car payment thing, I'm going to suggest, and believe me, we are not the answer to every problem, but the kinds of things people write into us about get better when you apply the tools that we're talking about. So mm-hmm. for instance, if John now refinances his home equity line of credit, he will get an interest-only payment. Now, most of the banks will do 1 year as a teaser rate. So for the next year, he'll have a really low payment, and then it'll mm-hmm. go up to whatever current interest rates are. And he'll be back in that wheel of interest only. I would recommend that if he puts it into our portal along with his other debts, his credit cards, his mortgages, his student loans, his car payments, whatever else he's got, mm-hmm. and looks at it, when he presses that submit button after entering the form online, he presses submit, he's going to see where that home equity line of credit lands in our little list of debts. Everybody gets paid minimums, at least one debt at a time. As we start paying things off, somebody's going to get paid more. Mm-hmm. But it's a sophisticated system. It isn't like the single-pronged systems you hear about. I won't mention names, but you've heard them. And that's why it's patented. So now he's going to see, oh, look, my home equity line of credit, when I refinance it, even though it normally has 10 more years to draw down, mm-hmm. looks like we pay that off in 6 years, 7 years, 8 years. That's before it will amortize again.
Okay.
So what he gets out of that is he can make his interest only payments mm-hmm. and they will get their interest only for, let's say if it's paid off in 6 years, they'll get it for 5.9 years. And then bam, they're going to start getting bigger payments, right? Or let's say five years or whatever. And then they start getting larger payments because we've paid off other debts that we're using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he gets that paid off before it ever amortizes. So that's the best of both worlds for somebody. And even if it's not paid off before the 10 years, we can usually tweak their plan to make sure that it is, so they don't have a ticking time bomb again.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, next question.
Wow, next question. These are long answers, but I hope they're good answers. My mom recently passed away. Who is this from? Edward from Keene. My mom recently passed away and left me a sizable sum. I need help understanding taxes, investments, and other details. Should I ask my accountant or a financial advisor? Okay, simple answer, both. You should be working with both on these things. A financial advisor may help you with some of the investment stuff, but I would definitely want to, if it were me working with him, I would want to involve his accountant and make sure that we have a full understanding of his tax situation now and going forward. And I might add to that team an attorney, even for some free consultation, an attorney, just to make sure that I don't know what a sizable sum is, but he might benefit from a trust or he might be wasting his money. I can't tell.
Yeah.
So that's a short answer is, yes, a financial advisor could help or a financial coach in our situation, but I would recommend that you do that as part of a team. Your mom probably saved money for a long time to be able to leave that to you, and I'm sure you want to manage it well.
Yeah. If you get left a sum like that, do you also have to worry about if there were any outstanding bills or any debts that your mom owed? Would that automatically come out of that money, or is that separate? Yeah.
It depends. First of all, condolences to Edward. It's sad to lose your parent, and we all know it might happen at some time, but yeah, yuck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to your question is it depends on the kind of debt. If it was a secured debt, like a mortgage on a house, for instance, that will have to be satisfied. But if it were credit card debt, which is unsecured, it dies with the person. I have to say, okay. I'm not an attorney. It dies with the person. Okay. So I hope that answers it. Let's see. Do I have time for one more? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, let's see. Kathy from Northampton. My husband has accumulated a lot of debt without my knowledge.
Ooh.
Seen this before.
Yeah.
Am I responsible for the debt? What if he files bankruptcy? Will my credit be affected? Okay. Three questions in one thing. Wow. So first of all, I've seen this happen many times. People won't always come clean and tell you. They'll first say they want to come to the appointment on their own. Their husband isn't available. Their wife isn't available. And so finally, you have to get that out in the open. Okay. It happened. I can almost assure you, I don't know why. I mean, it could be something like a gambling or a shopping problem, but most often what it is that that spouse was usually in charge of making sure the household finances worked and things changed gradually until they weren't working. And in order to continue to do their job within the marriage, to feel that value, they start juggling money and they get a home equity line and they get some credit cards and they think it's going to be temporary. It's just temporary until I can earn more money or until this thing changes. Mm-hmm. And it racks up very quickly. And then they're too ashamed, embarrassed, afraid to tell their spouse.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. One day the spouse or partner finds out and it's all blame. And the other person doesn't really know how it happened to them. They're like, I don't know. I was doing okay until.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing to try to do, it's really hard. I know you don't want to do it, but you have to try to have a conversation about it. And my advice would be it needs to be a calm, non-confrontational, not blaming, not angry conversation. And if you can't do it, get into a meeting with somebody who can help you, a counselor, a financial coach, somebody that can help you. Not that we're marriage counselors, but who can help you address this in a calm environment where if it gets too ugly, somebody goes, wait, time out. No. That's not important. This is just called so what, whatever has happened. This is my line. Whatever has happened so far, I call so what, right? Blaming is not going to help. Yes, we need to understand how it happened, but then we need to make it about fixing it. So then you got to get the two people on the same page together again, where they were in the beginning, because this didn't happen very rarely. Just one person just does it because it happens.
There's some kind of addiction problem or something. Yeah.
These are symptoms of a bigger problem, right? So we have to figure out what the problem was. And then we can help address that. And if it is a gambling or a shopping problem, there are people who can help with those kinds of concerns as well. But her question about what if he files a bankruptcy, will my credit be affected? Is she responsible for the debt? Is a little more complicated. And I will send her to an attorney for this, but I'll give some general information here. Is she responsible for the debt? Well, for every debt that he's got that she's an additional holder on, additional card holder or whatever, it's arguable that she's responsible for it. It's also arguable in our commonwealth that that's marital debt and that she may be responsible for it. But again, I'll hold this up to an attorney. The bankruptcy question is another story. So sometimes one person in the household will file bankruptcy and they'll live on the other person's credit.
Mm-hmm.
What gets muddy is whether she's responsible for any of this debt or not. Can she get her name off of it in time to file a bankruptcy, et cetera? Will that work? And it's the household income that they're going to look to see if he qualifies for a bankruptcy.
Okay.
So even though she may or may not be responsible for that debt, he may not be able to qualify for a bankruptcy. This is definitely a question for an attorney. I would recommend a couple of bankruptcy attorneys. Any bankruptcy attorney in our area is good, I think, but to get some answers. But if she can find somebody who's been a trustee on the board in Massachusetts who gets to decide whether these cases are acceptable or not, I think in her case, that might be a good thing to do. And if she reaches out to me, I'll be glad to give her a couple of names. I don't make any money on this. We don't do any of that. I just have some names of attorneys that might be good that I've worked with in the past for bankruptcy in case she's concerned about this. Yeah.
I've got to say, I'm surprised by that answer because I really thought it was going to be if you're married, you are responsible. Like I thought automatically you would be.
I think the level of responsibility maybe questionable. And that's why I'm saying she needs to talk to an attorney. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe it's just, hey, if you're married, too bad, you're stuck with it. But I think that there's probably some.
But if you're not, I guess my recommendation for this would be to use your husband's credit card all the time.
Oh,
no, don't take advice from me.
Wow. Well,
and this is why I'm not married.
I have nothing to say about that. I will see you and your partner in a month, Jess.
Exactly. I think we can squeeze one more in if you've got one more.
Oh, really? Let's see.
A quick one.
Well, this is similar to the car question, but Lisa from Brattleboro writes, I have some money saved, but I will need a car in the next year or two. My lease runs out in 6 months. Is this a time to buy a house or should I keep renting? Oh, okay. That's a compound question. So I'm just going to take the car part because we're short on time and we'll try to answer the other part in another show. She has some money saved. She needs a car in the next year or two and her lease runs out in 6 months. What should she do? All right. So this is about lease versus buy.
I hear this all the time. And also, if you were going to lease, should you put money down?
Yeah, no. Well, yeah. Again, it depends on your personal circumstances, but I like to recommend a lease for a couple of reasons. One, you're in a business and the lease is, you know, something that you can write off for the business and your accountant says this is the best idea for you. Lease, don't buy.
Okay.
You don't have very much money. You cannot tolerate surprise car expenses and or a high car payment. So in that case, for a short-term solution, like maybe lease another car, that means that she doesn't have those surprise expenses. And it means you can get to another place in 2 or 3 years from now where she might be in a position to buy a car.
And you have the benefit of a brand new car you're driving again.
That's the idea. Now, that little thing you just said, and you have a brand new car you're driving, is why I don't recommend a lease. I don't recommend that you lease more car than you could have bought. The way you win this game is you find a car you would have bought and you lease it to get the lower payment. And that gets you through to the end. Because what happens is people take a high lease payment because they're driving a fancy car.
Yeah.
So for $500, you too can drive a Mercedes for 3 years until it ends. And then what? Okay. And then you get used to driving the Mercedes and then you stretch to get into that payment, et cetera. So I think in terms of her some money saved, that doesn't sound like she has a lot of money saved. I would tend to tell her to hoard that, to hold on to the money, because she doesn't sound like she's in a very stable financial position. But I would like to talk to her about getting her through that lease and into something that she can own in the future. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, let's get your phone number. I know that was a lot.
Okay. 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com and also keep the questions coming. We love these question shows.
Great. We didn't even get to all of them today. So absolutely. Please send your questions to jtyler@whmp.com, right?
Yes.
You got it. J. Yeah.
All right. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info@hugyourmoney.com.